Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's Dealer On webinar, Underperforming Dealership to Superstar Results in 7 Steps. My name is Eliana Raggio, and I'll be your moderator today. And today's webinar is being presented by Dealer On. For anyone who isn't familiar with Dealer On, we're an award-winning website development company and digital agency, best known for our amazing SEO, the best customer service, and the highest converting website designs in the industry, including the award-winning Chameleon Responsive Website Platform. We've been awarded the Driving Sales Dealer Satisfaction Award for top-rated websites for an unprecedented seventh year in a row. We also took home the AWA Award for Best Websites 3 times, plus FCA and Ford recently announced that we're now an approved vendor. Big things are always happening over here at Dealer On. We're still the only company in the industry that offers a money-back lead guarantee program. Do you want to know more? Yeah, you do. You can check us out at DealerOn.com. Hey, the Innovative Dealer Summit is next week in Denver, Colorado, and our very own Greg Gifford will be presenting there and walk you through a step-by-step process to use local SEO to get your dealership on the map and the CERT's results page. And Digital Dealer is just around the corner, too, this time in sunny Orlando, Florida. Did you know that we're giving away $100 for pre-scheduling a demo with us? Use the link below to sign up. And if you're going to make sure you catch Greg's local SEO session that will use real-world examples and case studies, remember, come to booth 307 and see why thousands of dealers have partnered with us to sell more cars more profitably. Hope to see you there. And we have a great show in store for you today. We're very pleased to have Mark Tewart as a first-time Dealer On webinar presenter today. Mark Tewart is the president of Tewart Enterprises, Inc., an in-demand professional speaker, business consultant, business performance turnaround expert, media spokesperson, and recognized sales management and operations authority in the automotive industry. Mark has over 36 years of successful experience spanning from sales, F&I, general manager, executive manager, to trainer, consultant, and speaker. He's also the host of the TV show On the Mark with Mark Tewart on CBT News and is the author of the best-selling book, How to Be a Sales Superstar. Mark is a popular speaker at industry events such as the NADA convention and is a longtime professional member of the National Speakers Association and the Authors Guild. Mark is a regular contributor to many industry magazines, a highly respected member of the automotive community, and he can be reached at mtewart@tewart.com. And by the way, Mark will also be at the upcoming Digital Dealer Convention, where he'll be moderating a great panel on the future of automotive retail. Believe me, you do not want to miss that. Make sure you catch that. And hopefully that slide will go forward at some point during the presentation. A little late, Mark, but I love you anyway. During the presentation, if you have any questions, please use the question feature located on the corner of your screen to submit them. At the end of the presentation, we'll answer those questions of general interest. If we're unable to get to your question live, we're going to try to respond by email later today. And don't forget, a link to download a copy of this webinar recording will also be emailed to you later today for your reference. Feel free to share it with your friends and colleagues. Mark, if you wouldn't mind, could you go forward an extra slide? And guess what? Our good friends at Tewart Enterprises, one more slide. There you go. Our good friends at Tewart Enterprises have 2 great prizes today on the webinar. First, one of you lucky webinar attendees is going to win a signed copy of Mark's best-selling book, How to Be a Sales Superstar, Break All the Rules, and Succeed While Doing It. Next, one person is going to win our grand prize, a 30 days of unlimited access to the Tewart 24/7 online training channel, the most comprehensive online training channel in the biz. This prize is valued at $995, but quite frankly, it's filled with priceless information. Great prize for you and your dealership. Let me tell you, though, you have to be on the live broadcast to win it, though, so stay tuned for your chance to walk away with one of these awesome prizes today. Also, at the conclusion of the webinar, you're going to get a short survey, so fill it out. We're always looking for quality feedback from our audience, and we want to hear what you have to say about today's show. And hey, do you tweet much? We hope you do. We'd love to see what you have to say about today's presentation, so please tag us in it. You can use hashtag DealerOnWebby. I'm at Eliana Raggio, and you can also hit up Mark Tewart at, you guessed it, Mark Tewart. We look forward to seeing what you're saying. All right, everyone, let's get started. Let's learn how to go from underperforming dealership to superstar results in only 7 steps. Mark Tewart, how long have I been hounding you to get on this show? And I'm so glad you finally came onto the show. Thank you so much for being here today and bringing us such a great topic.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. It's an honor. I appreciate it, and I appreciate everybody being on today, especially because I know it's the end of the month, and that makes it a little bit more challenging to be here, so thank you very much.
Oh, well, it's okay, because you know what, Mark? I know for a fact you're coming at them today with some great, awesome strategies that they can use to turn their dealerships around and get them from underperforming dealership status to superstar status, and that's what we're looking for. So I know, Mark, you have a lot to get to today. Without further ado, why don't you tell the audience the awesome things they're going to be learning about in the next hour.
The objectives today, I want to identify some common areas for dealership underperformance. I also want to identify what I call systemic issues that commonly cause the areas of underperformance. And then from there, hopefully establish actions to fix the causes of that underperformance. And then establish what I call fail-safe measures to keep underperformance from recurring.
This all sounds great. Now, audience, as I mentioned before, first-time Dealer On webinar presenter Mark Tewart is here today, and you know what we do. We put them through the gauntlet. So make sure you ask great questions. We're looking forward to a nice, robust Q&A system at the end of the show. And, Mark, dazzle us with your amazingness. Take it away. Tell us how to do this in 7 steps.
All right. I'm going to do my best in the time allotted to try to help everybody out there, so let's rock and roll. First thing, I was just at the NADA convention, and you'll see a lot of people there, a lot of dealers and leaders, and they'll be on the showroom floor of the convention trying to find things that will help them improve their business or get past the challenges or, if you will, maybe even underperformance. And there's no shame in the game. Everybody underperforms at one time or another or has a department that underperforms. So there's no shame in the game. The main thing is just realizing it and taking personal responsibility. But what happens often is those dealers on the convention floor, or all of us, we might look for a magic bullet. We might look for a certain technology, an advertising program, something that's going to dramatically change everything that we do and fix that underperformance. Well, the reality is it's just not quite that easy, and that's not how it works. The very first thing you have to do, I believe, is you have to take personal responsibility, and you have to change individual and organizational belief systems. Why? Because if you go to that NADA convention and you get the best advertising program on earth, you get the best technology, the best CRM, the best tools, whatever it may be, until you change the belief system, nothing's going to change. It's just going to be another shiny object you're paying for that you're not going to get results for. So we want to start with changing what we do in incremental belief systems and steps. And dealer principals, executive leaders first. This is an old phrase, but speed of the boss, speed of the crew, as you think and act, your team shall too. So you have to be the very first to change. Often, when we get a potential client, we have a very long conversation with the leaders of the organization. And what I'm looking for is, do those leaders or the dealer principal, are they willing to change? Are they taking responsibility? If they're blaming people, and I'll often hear things like, well, it's our brand. Our brand is a little weak right now, or we're just not in a great location, or the market is not good in our area. Our facilities just aren't right, or maybe we're having a real challenge in our area getting people, and you just can't get good people in our area, or they don't have the right capitalization. Or one of the biggest ones that I hear in a belief system is what I call the when-then syndrome. When we get to here, then we'll do this. Once we achieve this, then we'll go there. Well, there's a little quote, I think it's biblical, but it says, if you move towards me, I'll move towards you. And the universe wants to see that you're going to put your foot forward and take some actions. And the first thing to change organizational and individual belief systems is to start to act, walk, talk, and do things as if you're already at that level that you want to be at. And when you do that, others around you and the universe is going to see and reward you because you're having the guts to move forward. You cannot do the win-win syndrome because it just won't work. You have to display the confidence that you're going to be there first. So leaders, be willing to accept change and accept responsibility. For any of you that have maybe ever heard me speak at a conference, you may have heard me do a particular speech or a program that I'm known for called Stop It. And I kid in this speech, but I put a little video in there. It's an old comedic video from Bob Newhart. And he has a patient. He's a psychologist. She's going over her problems. And then when she gets to the end of the problems, Bob Newhart looks at her and he says, "Stop it," in a loud voice. Well, often the very first step that I have to take with some of my clients is in a nice way, look at them and say, "Stop it." All change, every single thing that you'll do to improve comes from what I call the pleasure-pain principle. You're either moving towards pleasure or away from pain and all decisions. And often the biggest motivator is when you have too much pain. I think it was Zig Ziglar in a story talked about he was overweight and he just got sick and tired of being sick and tired, so he was going to change. Well, that's a great motivator to get you moving forward, and then you're going to have the discipline to move towards the pleasure from there on out to keep going, but you have to be willing to first take responsibility, look in the mirror and say as the leader, listen, if this is underperforming, this has got to be my issue. I'm the one that made this happen. And I'm the one that's got to start the ball rolling to get it to change. So eliminate any excuses. I have a little cup on my desk with the international no sign, and it says no excuses. So eliminate the excuses. And then the next thing that I look for if I'm talking to a client that's going through underperformance, I want to hear in their voice that they have a teachable spirit. Once my book came out, I had a lot of radio and TV interviews. And people would say, what's the biggest thing you look for with potential employees or potential success? And I said, there's several things I think that can make up success, but one thing I always look for is when a person has a teachable spirit. Listen, if you've got all the ideas and you know everything, then you're never going to go anywhere. I find that the very best people on earth, the most successful people, are always willing to have a teachable spirit. They're always looking to learn. So the biggest thing right now is we're trying to change individual and organizational belief systems because all external things that are going wrong are internal issues. You never fix an external problem until you fix the internal issues. I think it was Jim Rohn, the late great business philosopher, he said something that if you want things to change, you have to change. If you want things to improve, you have to improve. And those are very true phrases. So I always ask for the leaders to dive deeply into what are your four P's? People, process, product, and positioning. Years ago, I saw the first show when The Prophet came on TV with Marcus Lemonis. And I said, hey, that guy kind of does what I do, but I just do it for the auto industry. And I heard him talking about the three P's, and I said, well, you know, I talk about four P's. So drilling down through the four P's we're going to discuss today, the first P.
Great. I'm curious, which P was he missing?
He did not have positioning. I'm sorry. People, process, product, and positioning.
Got it. Interesting.
People, how do you recruit, hire, train, retain, motivate, and educate people? Because with all the shiny objects, advertising, any tool that you have, nothing will ever matter unless you've got the right people. It's still a people business. The old phrase, people buy from people, is very much true, and people execute every single thing that we do. So you not only have to have the right people, Jim Collins in the book Good to Great said you got to have the right people on the bus, you got to put them in the right seats. Often I'll find with underperforming dealerships, we have some really good people, we have them in the wrong seats. What they're doing does not match their talent, their abilities, or their desires. So I'm going to give you some tips today on people. Process. The way that you start to change individual and organizational belief systems is to put in incremental processes that create a belief system around winning. I call this success rituals. And how do you do a successful ritual? You do it every single day. There's another phrase that says, you know, do I have to do this every day? No, you just do it on the days you want to be successful. So we're going to talk about different processes. And the next one is product. That's your inventory or your service. But we're going to go into just a few ideas about your inventory and especially your pre-owned inventory. And then the last P out of the fourth P is positioning. And what I mean by positioning is what is not only your advertising and marketing, online, offline, digital, etc., but what is your position in that marketplace? And one of the questions I'll ask a potential client, if they're underperforming, is I'll ask them, if somebody were to shop your brand in your area, 5, 6, 10, however many dealerships, what makes you the better, different, or unique choice? Some people call this a USP, a unique selling proposition. And I'm often amazed, but it's very, very, very rare, if almost never, that if somebody is underperforming, that they can articulate this to a very concise way. In other words, they can't tell me what makes them better, different, or unique. They might say something to the effect of, well, we've been here a long time. Well, that's just not deep enough. It's not good enough. It's not concise enough. It's not beneficial to the client. And even, I just had a recent client that had been in business as family owned since 1929. And I said, have you ever thought about the idea that you're not telling your story, you're not telling it well enough? I have a little phrase, tell your story, tell it well, and tell it often, but make it specific to what the client would be motivated to do and take action with you. So that's what I mean by process. And the other part of that positioning for that client was you might have millennials in your marketplace, and what they hear with family owned since 1929, I'm not a millennial, but they might be hearing old, stodgy, set in their ways, not accepting of technology. So we really have to dive into those four P's and start to change them to change the overall belief system.
Now, this is funny that you bring that up, because I was actually watching TV with my husband just two nights ago, and some commercial came on, and they said, family owned and operated for over 60 years. And I turned to my husband, and I said, that's not a selling point for me. Is that a selling point for you? And it's not. And I know a lot of businesses, not just auto dealers, but a lot of businesses think that that's a selling point, but that does not make you unique. And it doesn't make me say, oh, well, then I'm going to go do business with that person. So, I mean, do you agree, or you encourage people to change that mindset? What are you telling them? Is that
a good point? I both agree and disagree. And what I mean by that, Eliana, is that if they're going to have that story, they have to be a lot more precise of what that means to the customer.
Yeah.
So how do they benefit from you being there from 1929? What's that mean to them? And it has to be specific. And you have to tell your story, but tell it well in a very concise manner that somebody would say, okay, that makes sense. I have to choose them. So I think you have to add other things that would make your positioning much stronger in that marketplace. So you're right. And I also believe that loyalty is not as great as it used to be.
Mm.
And so if that is your overriding message, I believe it's probably not being heard by a whole lot of the marketplace today. Listen, people don't care that Amazon hasn't been in business for 50 years. They don't care. What they care is, what does Amazon do for me right now today? That's what they care about. So moving forward, let's talk about, number one, if you're going to look at people, there's two parts. Number one, how do you attract, select, interview, and hire the right team members? And you would think I was a recruiting company as much as I talk about this, but we're not. There are other people that do that well. That's not what we do. But I do know this. If you have to have the right people, how are you going to attract, select, interview, and hire the right team members? And there's five ways that I measure a business. Number one, do you attract and select, hire the right people? Number two, do you educate them? Number three, do you motivate them? Number four, do you give them very clearly communicated communications and expectations? And number five, do you hold them accountable? But going back to the people part at the beginning of attracting and selecting, If you don't have that, none of the rest of it's going to matter. So I always look at what is your current staff, and we're going to also look at your current people, and then how do we attract more? The difference today that I see with recruiting people, in the past, dealerships generally did it out of need. They said, okay, we need a couple of salespeople. Let's run this ad. Let's see if we can find somebody. Well, it is probably a greater challenge to get people today. It's one that could be met. But if you're going to wait till you do it out of need, it's too late. So you have to recruit out of want. It's like the NFL draft. You were talking about the Eagles. They won the Super Bowl, but they're going to have a draft this year, and they're going to try to improve their team. So every single day, I believe you got to have four or five, six ways that you're trying to recruit people to at least look so you're ready if you do need and then want somebody for your staff. And you have to write it down. And one of the things that I'll see is we really don't know exactly what we're looking for. So what is the one choice you have to make first? You have to make a choice that you're going to have the best possible team that you can, and that you're not going to use excuses that you can't get good people. People always ask me in the industry, what's the one thing that we could change that we don't do well enough in our industry? And it's the same as it's always been. We don't get enough good quality people and keep them. In the last 5 years, we've had a record run. I mean, we have had incredible sales and results and profits. But yet last year, I've heard that we had between 70 to 77% turnover ratio in sales. So we have a culture problem. We have a pay plan problem. We have an environment problem. And maybe we're just not attracting and selecting the right people. So the first thing I do is I believe you have to write everything down. And as leaders, you have to get together and say, if I wanted a salesperson that was going to be a good to a great salesperson for our culture, our environment, and our business, what does that look like? In other words, if somebody was sitting in front of you, what are you looking for? How would you know that unless you've quantified it? I have a little phrase, you have to quantify to qualify. You have to quantify things and write them down on paper and know what you're looking for, and then qualify it as you go through it to make it better. So what makes a great salesperson for you, and then what I call your disqualifiers. What do you not want? If it's job hoppers, then don't hire job hoppers. If you want only people with experience, then make sure you write that down. Or if a disqualifier is people with experience, you want only rookies, then write it down. But you won't know unless you put it down on paper. And then combine a little science with the gut. What I mean by that is often we'll go into an interview and we don't have set interview questions. I always give my clients up to 100 interview questions, and I invite them to do the exact same interview every single time. And if you're going to use a sales predictive indicator or other tools that will involve a little science with the gut, you're better off. Let me give you an example of this. I was at a dealership, and a couple of the managers said, hey, would you talk to one of the people we just interviewed? We love this person, and we think they'd make a great salesperson. We just want to see what you think. And I said, I'll do it on two conditions. Number one, it's going to take about 45 minutes to an hour, and I need both of you in the room. And they were like, are you kidding me? And I said, if you won't invest the time now, how long will you invest with them for the next 6 months trying to make somebody who might have been a zero into a hero when you could have figured out in the beginning, maybe, that they weren't the right choice for you? And there's no perfect fit to this. I mean, we all make mistakes in hiring, but we have to get the right people. So what I did was I sat in there using those interview questions.
100 interview questions.
And I probably didn't get through 100, Eliana, but we got through a lot of them.
Okay. And so I was going to say, how do you get through 100 in 40 minutes?
I know. And it can take more than an hour, as long as it takes. But what happened was at the end, I walked out with the managers and I said, okay, now how do you feel about this person? And they said, well, we would not hire them. And I said, well, wait a minute. An hour ago, this was a superstar. Now you don't even want to hire the person. What happened? They said, you ask a lot deeper, more, and better questions, and we have a much truer understanding. And it became evident that this person would not be a good fit and probably would not make it. Now, you never know if you're going to make the perfect choice. But if you're not willing to spend the time up front, and often what we do is we wing it. And if you think about any leaders on the call right now in this webinar, if a salesperson went out and had no process and wanted to work a deal with you and you said, did they drive the car? And you said, no. Tell me about the customer. They didn't know anything about the customer. They didn't know wants or needs. What would you do? You would send them back, hopefully, or TO and get somebody that would do their job. But yet we'll go into an interview and we don't have any game plan often on what we're looking for, how we're going to find it, and what the questions will be, etc. So that's just the first step in that process. Now, the other part is you have to reevaluate your current staff, and you got to be brutally honest and make some tough decisions. And later on, I'm going to talk about a process I go through called the three C's: coach, counsel, cup. If you hire somebody, you are obligated to do every single thing you do to make sure that they're successful. You have to coach them. You have to train them. You have to educate them. You have to give them everything you can, because if they fail, really you failed because you may have hired the wrong person. So I want to make sure that I coach them. Next is counseling. I'm going to move into a stage where if they're not reaching expectations, doing their job correctly or performing, then I have to sit down and counsel them, and I have to say, here's the actions you have to take, the results you have to have, and the movement forward, and by when. And then if it's not happening, you owe it to yourself at that point to cut. Coach, counsel, cut. And part of this process is looking at your people and to stop tolerating really bad or lack of good behavior. I keep hearing dealers that are basically being held hostage. And what I mean by that is, in this, creating a positive culture and environment is step number two. And you don't do that by allowing people to underperform continually or to make excuses or to do bad things in your dealership. And what I'll hear is, well, it's so hard to get good people, Mark. And if I let Johnny here go, what do I get after him? And the moment I hear that, you've given away your power and direction in the positive culture and environment of your dealership. And I'll just give you an example. I had a client who, you know, by his own description was a very, very nice man. And he kept saying, yeah, I should do that, but, you know, I'm just too nice. I'm too nice. And I kept agreeing with him. And then one day I said, you know, I changed my mind. I'm being codependent to you, and I'm no longer going to do that because I owe you better than that. You're not nice. You're mean. And he said, nobody's ever said I was mean. What do you mean by that? I said, if you were nice, you would be nice to your business, but you're not. What you're doing is tolerating really low behavior from people. And because of that, you're being mean to yourself, to your family, to your business, and to the good team members that are trying so hard to do a good job and do better. And so since you're tolerating less than better performance or people not even trying, that's being mean to everybody, and you really have to stop it. And until you stop that, you can't create that positive culture and environment in your dealership. So stop tolerating. Do not be held hostage by what I call sacred cows, people that have been there a long time, but they're very much underperforming or not trying to be better. Don't allow the underperformance. Raise your expectations dramatically. And I'll give you an idea. My son is going to play football at the University of Cincinnati next year, and he's not on campus yet. He's still in high school, but he's went and viewed a couple of practices. And he said that what he saw and what I've heard from staff is that the new coach there has a completely different culture and environment where every little detail is being held to not perfection, but trying to achieve it, trying to move towards it. And I have always said that, you know, a big door swings on small hinges. And a dealership really is about very small things. Often we're looking for the magic bullet fix of technology or advertising, and all those things will work, but they won't work unless you're really expecting higher results and better actions. So challenge your people, stretch them, talk about winning in every single thing that you do. Talk about higher performance and better and how we're doing better and how that small action is making us better. And you do this through formal and informal channels. Let me give you an idea. I had a client, somebody I'd mentored for years, many years, and he took over another dealership. And he knew that the culture and environment was not good. He knew that they had no processes there and it was going to be a challenge. And he asked me, should I go in and start changing everything to try to fix it all, you know, immediately? And I said, you know, you could, but I wouldn't. What I would do is try to create formal and informal channels to create a positive culture. And the way that I would do that is in the first week to 2 weeks, I would sit down with every single person personally that I could and have a conversation with them. Find out what they like and what they don't like, who they are. You know, there's a phrase that when the why gets strong, the how gets easy. And every single person has a different why. I said I would take a different person out of the dealership every single day and go to lunch with them. And when you do that, what happens, the subconscious lowers the barriers and they begin to tell you more of who they are and what's going on and what they would like to see and their frustrations. And when you learn, you also gain trust because you're listening. And the greatest thing that you can ever do in communication to create a positive culture and environment is just to listen. You can't communicate unless you listen. So create formal and informal channels. And then acknowledge and reward the efforts and results that you're looking for with every single person. And the other thing is evaluate your pay plans in the motivation to create a positive culture. Often pay plans in dealerships are created with money only, and every single study always shows that the majority, not all, but the majority of people are motivated by money as about the fifth or sixth thing. As a matter of fact, it's true that people will leave managers more than they'll leave a business, and that the pay plan alone will not be usually the overriding thing that would keep somebody staying a good person at a dealership. They need education. A millennial today, most millennials, I can't group them all together, but they want education. They want to know what the path is. They may have been brought up where they've been handheld a little bit. And imagine the environment where we bring them in and we say, there's your desk, there's a car, go sell something. It just doesn't, they quit the first day. We've lost them. They've mentally quit. So all of this will begin to change what I call your culture in your environment when you do these things. Now, let's talk about an important part. Onboard, educate, and train. I have a dealership, several, but one just recently, where I instructed them, I would like for you to create, first of all, a 30-day onboarding plan. It has to be written, it has to be detailed, and it has to be every hour, basically on the hour, what are we going to do with a brand new employee for the first 30 days? We want to give them a chance to succeed. And so you have to write it down. And they said to me, Mark, can you give us some examples from your other clients? I said, I could, but I'm not right up front. I want you to do the work. It's painful. We're very entrepreneurial in this business. And so we tend to be a little bit more seat of our pants and we don't formalize things. I said, I really want you to go through the painstaking effort to sit down and write out exactly every hour in the hour what you're going to do with somebody for 30 days to help make them successful and onboard them correctly to give your dealership a chance for success. Then I'll give you examples and you can add or delete, edit and change how you want to make it better. But the thing is just making the effort to start to figure out what your onboarding program is going to be. Then I believe you got to have a training calendar. Not just for new people, but you got to have it for everybody. And you got to have what your topic's going to be, when it's going to be done. And I've always thought that if you did 10 minutes of training a day, then you're better off doing that and drilling down on one particular thing to get better than if you're trying to do something for 8 hours in one day. I always say that your brain can only gain what your butt can maintain. We're ADD in this business. And so what happens is if you train too long, people tend to tune out no matter how exciting you are. Really drill down and create that calendar. People have to know when they're going to train, how they're going to train, what the topic is, And once again, writing this down, this is something I did every day, or excuse me, every month as a general manager and executive leader. I wrote out my training calendar, and we never missed. And I don't allow people not to try to get better. I had a salesperson that worked for me at a dealership I took over, and he came to me, and he was kind of gruff, and he sold 24 or 5 cars a month, and he said, "Hey, I hope you understand, I'm not going to do the training because I sell a lot of cars. I know what I've been doing, and I've been doing it a long time. And the other guys need it, but I know you understand I won't be in there." And I said, "Hey, I don't have many black-white issues, but there's no gray area to this. You have to do it." And he goes, "Well, it's just not something I'm willing to do." And I said, "Well, I'll give you a great reference. I appreciate you being here." And he said, "You mean you would fire me and I sell 24 to 5 cars a month?" I said, "No, I just did. Listen, I'd be crazy to fire a 24 or 25 car person. It's insane. But if you're telling me that as a 24 or 25 car person that you can't get better, I believe that you're wrong in that. As a matter of fact, I think you can get better than anybody else because you have the work ethic, the talent, the ability. You have all these things that could grow you further faster than somebody that's probably selling 12. And what message would I send to the rest of the team if I sent a 12 car message person that it's okay not to try to get better because you won't? I said, "Trust me, let me be clear, never going to happen." So that's not the culture and environment. What I want is a 30-day commitment from you that will self-educate. I think also it was Jim Rohn that said that a college education will get you a job, but self-education will make you rich. So give me 30 days, and at the end of 30 days, if it doesn't work for you, hey, we'll part as friends. But let me be clear, we're not going to change this. We're going to have training. And at the end of 30 days, he did sell more cars, and he also admitted that he learned something. And what we train on and work on every single day are 4 skills, sales skills, anything from how you meet and greet, phone skills, anything you do in your sales situations. People skills, why? Active listening skills, persuasion, because when you sell, you persuade. Most people train only on sales technique. You're going to find the better the salesperson, the less sales technique that they'll need as they get better. So I like to look at people skills, then life skills. I think the majority of salespeople that are not reaching where they want to be or if they're failing is not even because of sales skills or people skills. It's generally life skills. In other words, they don't know what to do with their day. What is a plan that they will execute every day? What's their attitude that they'll have in a selling situation? What are their goals, and how do they understand their subconscious mind to be able to reach their goals, which we'll talk about a book later on that will help you with that. And then also marketing. What do I mean by marketing? What do you do to execute a plan for yourself as a salesperson? How do you prospect every day? How do you market yourself both online, offline, and in social media that would make you attractive to potential customers? How do you set up your own brand? All of these things we train on rather than just sales skills. And then the other thing, utilize others in varied formats. When you train, you have to utilize others because you become part of the woodwork. In other words, you may have somebody come in from the outside and say pretty much the same thing you've said, but there's an old phrase, I think it's biblical, that says, you're never an expert in your own area, so to speak, in your own backyard. So if you utilize other voices, people will listen to that, and it will help you. So I used to bring in guest speakers. I used to bring in other people besides myself, and we rotated. And I even had salespeople begin to do training programs for 10 minutes a day on any topic that they wanted. It could be dress. It could be better ways to eat, because we often eat bad in dealerships. We're on the go. It could be a sales technique. Anything they wanted to do, I wanted their involvement because we want to make it a team. So we're going to onboard, we're going to educate, onboard, educate, and train. And when people say, "Well, what's the difference between education and training?" One of my mentors, Nito Cubain, who's the president of High Point University, he said, "Mark, do you know what the difference between training and education is?" And I said, "No, what's that?" He said, "If you had a daughter and you sent her to school, would you want her to have sex education or sex training?"
I said, "Oh, man, that's a terrible example."
Maybe neither. I don't think I want either, but if I got a choice, I think I'm going to go with the education, not training. So I got the idea. Training is something that we do as a flash, and it leaves a sunburn. We do it every once in a while, and it doesn't work. Education is something you do, even if it's 10 minutes a day, every single day, so everybody's getting better. You know, I remember we had an opportunity to do leasing because nobody in the marketplace was really doing leasing. And we trained like crazy. And about 60 days later, 90 days later, we went from 2 to 52 leases. It was pretty incredible. And the guys and gals at the dealership said, man, we know this stuff, Mark. We know it better than you do. We don't have to talk about it anymore. And I said, you have done so well. You really know it. You've got it down. And your results show it. And I'm super proud of you guys. And I just want to share with you, if we've done that well in 60 days, imagine if we keep talking about this for a year, how great we'll be at that point. So the idea was, this is never going to go away. Consistent and persistent. Keep talking about the same things, a lot of the same things every day. And that brings us, Eliana, to a poll question. Let's ask everybody what they're thinking.
Oh, I would love to do this. Mark, by the way, you're doing amazing. Thank you so much. All right, audience, we need your involvement on these poll questions. It really helps us out. We want to know if you would get involved in this one. We actually have two back-to-back poll questions right here. We want to know, do you currently have an onboarding plan for new hires at your dealership? Please select one of the following answers. Yes, and it's working great for us. Yes, but we admit we could use some improvement on it. We don't have one yet, but maybe we should. You know what? We have one, but we don't consistently use it, if ever. And no, didn't know we needed an onboarding plan for new hires. Once we get a majority of the votes in, we're going to close this poll, share the results, and then get to our second poll question. That's right. We got two back-to-back questions for you fine folks today. Hope you're going to get involved with all of our poll questions. We actually have four for the show today. And also, Mark already got in some amazing questions from the audience, which, quite frankly, I believe each one of these different questions could probably be another webinar topic in its entirety. But we're going to go with it anyway, and I'm looking forward to our Q&A session. And audience, you got questions for Mark Tewart? Send those questions in. I'm looking forward to our Q&A session. All right, Mark, let's close out this first poll question, see what the audience had to say. Are you ready?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, here we go. Audience, thank you so much for the votes on the first poll question. Let's see what happened. Do you currently have an onboarding plan for new hires? No one said yes, and it's working great for us. That is a goose egg. No one said that. The majority, however, 38%, said yes, they do, but they admit they could use some improvement on it. A quarter of today's audience, 25%, said they don't have one yet, but maybe they should. Another quarter of today's audience say they have one, but they're not consistent with it. And then 13% of today's audience said they didn't know they needed an onboarding plan for new hires. I'm with you, people. So thank you so much for answering that first poll question. Before we get to the second poll question, Mark, do you have any comments about those results? Is this what you were expecting?
You know, I really honor the people in being honest and taking personal responsibility in their answers. That's the biggest thing that I got out of that.
I agree. Audience, you are amazing, and I'm looking forward to seeing how you answer this second poll question as well. It's on the screen now. We want to know, do you currently have a continual training program for sales and management at your dealership? Once we get a majority of the votes in, we're going to close this poll and share the results. And just to review, let's go over the answers. You could have yes, and it's working great for us. Yes, but we admit we're not consistent with it. You know what? We have sales training, but not management training. I think a lot of people might answer that. No, but does OEM training count? Mark, just so we're clear, does OEM training count?
It's only a small portion because it's generally more about product.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. So, and then the last answer is no, but we should. So okay. We're going to continue. We're going to say more.
No.
you have a minute. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
All right, audience, you guys are killing it today. Thank you so much for the votes. We'll leave it open for another few seconds, and then we'll close this poll, and we're going to find out if you currently have a continual training program for sales and management at your dealership. All right, Mark, are you ready to see what the audience had to say?
I am. Lay it on me.
Oh, my goodness. Wait till you see these answers. Okay, let's see. 3% of today's audience, only 3%. Well, at least it's not a zero. 3% of today's audience said, yes, they do have a continual training program for sales and management at the dealership, and it's working great for them. Congratulations. 31% of today's audience say, yes, they do, but they admit they're not consistent with it. A solid third of today's audience, 33%, said that they have sales training, but not management training at their dealership. Very interesting. 18% of today's audience says no, but does OEM training count? As we've already discussed with Mark, it counts a little bit, but no, not really. And 15% of today's audience say no, they don't. And they realize that they should. Mark Tewart, does that surprise you that so many people aren't getting the training in the dealerships that they actually need?
No, nothing. You know, as much as the business has changed, many things have stayed the same. And one of them is the lack of education. And the big one in there is educating salespeople, but not educating managers. Think about the message that sends. If the leaders aren't trying to get better, then why should the salespeople feel like they should get better? Now, they have to take it on their own. But I won't work with a client if they want us to do in-house programs for them. Unless they're willing to have management training first and then also be involved in anything that the sales, BDC, internet, or any other department is involved in. If they want us just to do sales training and nothing else, I'll refer them to somebody else because it's going to be a short-term fix at best. It will not be a lasting culture and environmental change. It does not make sense.
No, that's – I really respect that because I mean, shoot, all I do over here is education and training, right? But I think that there is a lack of education and training within our dealership. And I think you nailed it on the head earlier when you said, you know, if we had more education and training inside the dealership, maybe our attrition rate wouldn't be so disastrous in the automotive industry. All right, so now those two poll questions are put to bed. Mark, where do we go from here?
Okay, let's move on to the next step, which is number five, motivate. And I'm going to give you a couple of different ideas on this. You'll say, well, if we hire the best people, they'll be self-motivated. And on this slide here, you'll see where it says 85-10-5 rule. And I go by 85% of people are, you know, they're okay, but they're not going to be self-motivated all the time. And 10% are going to be really good about self-motivation and self-actualization in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. They're up at the top, and they do things, and you don't have to watch over them or even hardly even inspect them because they just do the right things. So it's 85, 10, and 5. 5 are the superstars. They do almost the right things every single day. But you'll notice 85% are probably not that way. And so, yeah, we're going to hire people if we can with self-motivation because the phrase is you hire for talent and attitude, you train for skills. Hire for talent and attitude, train for skills.
I'm going to have to interrupt you, Mark. I'm so sorry. For some reason, the slide is still stuck on the poll slide. So I just need to, real quick, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make myself the presenter and then switch it back over to you real fast. So hopefully okay. We can get this fixed. I apologize for the interruption, everyone. And let's see if that worked. I'm so sorry, Mark. You were on a roll, too. But I want to make sure everyone can see the slides because it still said it's on the slide program. Okay, so I made it back to you, so you have to accept presenter mode again.
Okay, show my screen. I'm in. Does it show up? It does on my end.
Good. Yes. All right, audience, we're back on. Thank you so much for your patience. And, Mark, I'm so sorry for the interruption. Please continue.
Okay, motivate. Now there's another portion to this. And I tell this story, but you mentioned Tim Jackson's Innovative Dealer Summit.
Yeah.
I was there a few years ago speaking, and I happened to see, I'm pretty sure it was at that program, there were two Navy SEALs. One of them, I remember the name because his name was Jocko. And a couple of years later, I saw him being interviewed on a video, and it really struck me because somebody asking, do you believe in training or motivation? And I'm paraphrasing, but he said, absolutely in training and in the mission and the discipline. And the reason being that in his example of a Navy SEAL, that if you're tired, you're hungry, if you're in stress and conditions of combat or wherever you're at, motivation is going to wane quickly. And I don't want to compare combat to sales or business.
Oh, no, it
There's
is.
It's not life or death. However, it is true that motivation will be the first thing to wane. I do believe in a business situation, we do have to provide some motivation. Now, what Jocko said was that in a Navy SEAL situation, they train religiously to the point where you know what to do. And even if you're in a situation where it's unclear, you just get to the next step so you can try to complete your mission. And often in sales, it's just about not closing a deal. Matter of fact, I hate the phrase ABC, always be closing. How about TLC, think like a customer? The root of the word sale means to serve. Serve somebody. Stop thinking about closing and you'll close more deals. Well, what I look at is training so somebody can complete their mission, which is serving somebody. But I do believe the difference between a business environment and maybe in what he talked about as a Navy SEAL is that there are collective things in an environment that will take away motivation. And boy, if you let that go on for more than a day, cancer will pervade in your dealership. It does not take long. So I'm always looking at how formally and informally we can do motivations. For example, if you have meetings, you've got to be clear. Is this going to be an information meeting, an education meeting, or a motivation meeting? Have a hard start and a hard stop. Know when this meeting is going to be over, what the agenda is, and what you're going to cover. And if it's a motivational meeting, it's all motivation. You're motivating your folks. Maybe that's a Saturday-type meeting. Maybe a Monday meeting is strictly information, rebates, trade-ins, any other information. And then you're going to have an educational meeting, which will be your training meetings. Don't mix your meetings. Why? I've seen often with no agenda and no hard start, hard stop, that they go into a meeting and then all of a sudden the informational meeting becomes a beat-em-up meeting. I used to kid because I worked for a guy by the name of Milt, who was my very first manager. And it was a great, great, great environment, except for basically him. It was very professional. And we had three meetings a week, and they all sounded like this. You're all stupid. You can't sell, but the ad's the same. Go get pumped up and sell something. And so the no agenda meeting, the agenda became, you're all stupid. You can't sell. The ad's the same. Go get pumped up and sell something. Well, the only reason we all stayed there was the rest of the dealership was phenomenal. He just had a little bit of a negative message, so we got past him. But you have to know how you're going to create motivation, and that is as simple as when you're coaching a deal, let somebody know what they did right, just not what they do wrong. We're pretty quick to tell people what they're doing wrong, but not coaching them in a daily one-on-one situation to say, man, here are all the things you're on, and you're not far away. You're close. A tweak here or there, we're at a whole nother level. And so it creates a different culture and environment. And once again, I mentioned money is often not the motivator. People will often run past money for a pat on the back, recognition, a title, all kinds of different things. Some people are money motivated. Just know every person's why. When the why gets strong, the how gets easy. The very first consulting job I ever did, it was a long program. And I'll never forget there was a problem with the used car manager, but he was very talented and he had had many results, but there were some things that were affecting the dealership. And I'll never forget that manager had been there 15 years, and the dealer said to me, well, does he have a family? Is he married? And I said, my bigger question for you is how does somebody work for you when you're here every day for 15 years and you don't know if he's married or has a family? I said, the problem is you. Look in the mirror. You don't even know anybody in your dealership.
Oh, my goodness.
How can you have any type of personal motivation that would make them feel that they want to be a part of this team? So that's part of the motivation part. Now, next step is huge. Communicate consistent and extremely clear communications. Ink it, don't think it. I was in a sales meeting of a client of mine in Mississippi. They may be on here today. And they were going over a challenge. And I asked if this was a challenge they continually have. And I said, do you have a written executed plan to communicate the systemic issues that cause it, that fix it, and what we do going forward? Have you put it in writing? And they said, no. And I said, if it's not written, it does not exist. So we believe that you have to write things down. Ink it, don't think it. And what you think they know and what they truly know are two different things. That's something that I learned early on as a trainer. You could go into a dealership over and over and you would think that they've got something, but as you dug deeper, you know that they didn't, and that's really incumbent upon me. That means I've failed. So what I have to do is keep going over things and breaking it down in such detail, getting their involvement to the point where they really know it, and that's consistent and extremely clear communications. Repetition is the mother of all learning, whether it's training, whether it's process. You have to have rituals of success. You don't do it sometimes. You do it every day. Let me talk about just a few of those things. I believe you have to have a firmly communicated, written, executed, trained on process for every single thing in your dealership. I'll give you a small example. One day we had at a dealership that I was the general manager of, we had a young man in high school bring up a car for delivery that he had detailed for delivery. And when I went out and looked at it, I wasn't happy. And I began to just, you know, verbally assault this guy more than what I should have. And then I looked at him and I apologized. I said, you know what? This isn't your fault. This is my fault. And I took him in the office and I went over every single thing that I could think of that would make a properly cleaned up and ready to go car. And then we put together a process that every single step of that was written down on a pad, and they were tear off pads. So going forward, when that person had completely finished that car, they had to go through every step. They had to initial every step of what would make it the expected way that it should be. And then they had to have a signature on it, and they had to have a manager sign off on it before that car was delivered, or even if it was to go into inventory. And so what I realized is what I thought somebody would know and what I expected them to know were two different things. So I want everything written down. And the next thing involved in that is what I call a routing procedure. That's deeper than a sales process. If somebody goes to your website, what do you want them to see? I go by the theory of TOT, T-O-T, the one thing. If they went to your website, what's the one thing you want them to do? Now, it's up to them on what they take action on, but trying to think like a customer, TLC. When they pull up to your dealership or they call your dealership, what do you want them to hear? How do you want them to be greeted at the door? What do you want them to see? I often say, go across from your dealership and look back and tell me what you see. Then when they come into the dealership, not only what do we do, who does it, and what are all the job descriptions of everybody doing it? I often find out that salespeople really don't even understand the job of F&I. So they don't give it enough respect in the manner that they should because they just don't understand it. So these are what I call routing procedures. And in routing procedures, I have what I call also my black-white issues. Not many of them, because I don't want to be so dictatorial I have an inflexible workplace. But I do have some things that are not black. They're not black. There is no gray. They're black or they are white. In other words, it is very specific. And one of those, as I mentioned to you, was the daily training. That is not, will you do it? Everybody's going to try to get better every single day. We will strive to get better every single day. These are what I call your daily rituals for success. Example, I believe that every dealership, if I owned your dealership, I know for a fact that if we opened up at 9 every day, every day, every day, I want to say that again, every day at about 8:30, we would have a save-a-deal meeting. And I would have the managers. I'd have the BDC. I would have internet. I would have the sales managers, new and used cars, general manager, F&I. And we would go over yesterday's business. We would go over our sold units, and we would know where the disposition of that deal is. And I live by a 1-3-5 rule. You got 1 day to get in and out of F&I, 3 days to have it in and out of the back office, and 5 days to be funded. Now, some deals, hopefully, will have funded immediately. And that's a little old school in the nature of the rule, but you get what I mean when I say 1-3-5. The idea is, if it's sitting in F&I, why and what can I do to help you to get it out of F&I? If there's something unfixed, let's put sense of urgency to it, because this is a now business. And that brings me to, when you have these rituals of success, what you're going to find is that you increase the sense of urgency. And I truly believe that every dealership on earth could sell 10% more cars right now. Why? A massive increase in sense of urgency. If we try to do things right now, how can I put this deal together? If I had a deal yesterday, we're looking at yesterday's business in this Save a Deal meeting. I want to go over yesterday's deals. I want to know where they're at. I want to know what the CIT is, their contracts in transit. If it's not funded at the bank, why? And what can we do to fix it and systemically make sure that it doesn't occur if it's going on longer than what it should? I want to go over heat sheet items. Do we have missing stipulations? Do we have missing trade titles or signatures? Kicked contracts. How do we fix it right now? And who is responsible when we walk out of this meeting? And how do we, more importantly, systemically, hopefully, fix that from ever happening again to our best ability? So I want to go over yesterday's sold units and know what's going on. If it was a turndown, if it was a condition deal, why? And I don't want to listen to just the manager tell me his story. I want to look at everything, the trade-in. I want to look at the credit. I want to look at, could we have offered a lease? And I do a little thing called walk the wheel. In other words, if you didn't put a deal together, we should have, but if we didn't walk the wheel, what's another possibility? This also makes a great sales training meeting. In other words, if you took every detail of this deal, let's open it up to everybody to say, what else could we do to put this deal together? I was recently at a dealership. They never showed the lease. And guess what? The lease was the magic answer to putting this deal together. We had another one where they did not offer cash back for equity in the trade. And we put a deal together because we offered cash back for equity in the trade. So in doing this, this should be some self-education, plus it creates deals from sold and from unsold. We want to look at, how many phone calls did we have yesterday? Let's listen to one. Let's go over them. How did we succeed? Did we get appointments? What appointments do we have today? Who, as a manager, has verified them? I want you to verify those appointments 3 times a day by a manager. If it was set by BDC, great, but let's have the manager verify those appointments. In other words, increase the urgency. I want to look at dealer trades. In other words, what I'm doing is communicating. I talked about this at NADA, and a guy came up and said, we're a small, small dealership. Do we really have to do that? And I said, absolutely, positively, yes. Because if nothing else, you'll find that you'll communicate better, and what you think you currently know collectively, you maybe don't know. And the more that you communicate, the better off you are. Why? Every single great dealership I've ever walked into, every great dealership communicates and over-communicates, if there is such a thing. And all poor to failing and underperforming dealerships either communicate poorly or not at all. So you got to do everything you can to increase the communication through your daily rituals of success. And that next ritual of success is to do daily one-on-ones with each salesperson. Start with the top salesperson, not the low performer. Why? I believe I can get more juice, if you will, out of somebody who's already succeeding. If they could sell 20, can they sell 30? The answer is yes. And then I work my way down, and then I go to, when I get to finally, the lowest performer. And when do you do this? Every single day. So my theory is, don't have multiple to-do lists. Create what my mentor said, a stop doing list. Quantify to qualify. What are you doing every day you shouldn't be doing? What are you doing today that you should delegate? And how can I alter my day and create rituals of success? First thing, I do that Save a Deal meeting. Immediately after that, we go into the one-on-ones. And we go through the salespeople, not every other day, every day. We go over your tasks. I was at a dealership recently, and one of the salespeople, when I opened up the computer, had 400 and some unperformed tasks. Ooh. You know what the bad part of that story is? The manager didn't know. How could the manager not know? He didn't have a daily ritual for success in coaching that person. He needed to understand that he was failing as much or more than that particular salesperson. So those are all things that will create what I think are rituals for success. Your education, your training, the one-on-ones, your meetings, your sense of urgency, and talking in a positive way while you're doing those things. So, you know, calling back the unsold customers, all of those things will work. Your F&I process, and we talked about, you know, holding people accountable and the three C's, coach, counsel, cut. Coach people, counsel them, cut them. When you do all these things, you have very, very, very strong, effective communication. We always say persistent is consistent. If you're consistent in your communication and execution, you have to be persistent. If you're persistent, you have to be consistent. They go hand in hand. So based upon that, Eliana, let's open it up and see if anybody has any questions.
All right, let's see. Poll question is on the screen now. Audience, I know we got to fly through this. It's already past the top of the hour. We still have so much more to get to, and the giveaway and the Q&A session. So let's get to this poll question immediately. Do you currently do a save a deal meeting in your management process? Please select one of the following answers. Yes, and it's working great for us. Yes, but we're not seeing the results we'd like. Yes, but we admit we're not consistent with it. No, or what the heck is a save a deal meeting? Now, I know he briefly went over what a save a deal meeting is, but if you didn't catch it, well, we have that answer for you there. Yes, we'll be getting to more stuff. Lance, I see your question. I'll be answering that in a little bit. And audience, thank you so much. We're waiting for a few more votes to come in, and then we'll close this poll and share the results. And Mark, you're doing, you know what, Mark? You know what I noticed about you? You got some great quotes and tons of awesome stories. Love, love, love it. Thank you very much. You're doing a great presentation. Okay, audience, thank you so much for your votes. We're going to close this poll and share the results. All right, do you currently do a save-a-deal meeting in your management process? 30% of today's audience said yes, and it's working great for us. That's awesome. No Good. One said that they're doing it and not seeing results. So that's great, too. 30% of today's audience also said, yes, but they admit they're not consistent with it. 26% of today's audience just plain out, no, we don't have one of those. Did we need one of those? They didn't know they needed it. And then 15% of today's audience don't know what a save a deal meeting is. Mark, back to you.
Fantastic.
Well, oh, no. Okay, good. It did flick over. Okay, I was worried it was going to get caught again, but yes. All right, and we are way past the top of the hour mark, so we're going to have to pick up the pace just a little bit, okay?
Got it. The next step, number 7, is create accountability and tolerations. I always say that you get in life what you tolerate, both good and bad. So eliminate passive-aggressive management styles. This is what I see a lot. In other words, we don't move into the council stage, and we wait till we're just blowing up at somebody or we're firing them. Do not do that. Coach, counsel, cut. If you have to go to counsel, don't be passive aggressive. And a client of mine, I don't think he was the first person to ever say this, but he used to say you lead people and you manage things. It's a lot easier to manage things than it is to lead people. You do it through coach, counsel, and cut. And one of the things that you do in your accountability is your, and I won't go into this a lot, but your inventory. I think you have to be ruthless about your inventory control. And maybe Jason from Rock Pop is on here, but he talks about some things I believe in a lot.
I love that guy. He's awesome.
Great guy. He talks about, like, you know, if you got a, instead of psychological pricing at $19,995, put it at $20 because you'll get a search and show up in the 15 to 20 in 2025. And he has a lot of great information around being ruthless around your inventory control. Now, we're going to offer it up to anybody because I can't go over it today, but I know we didn't talk about this, but I believe in what's called a tiered turn system. I believe in a hard turn system, like probably Jason and others would, like whether it's 30, 60, 90 days. But I do what's called a tiered turn system, and if anybody is interested in that, let me know. I'll be happy to supply it. And the last thing about inventory and ruthless control, the biggest thing I see in dealerships is you're not aggressive enough early enough with your high-end units. usually your losses, your biggest area that you can lose the quickest, the fastest, is your $20,000 plus units that were bought in an auction. They're subject to more flux, more fluctuations from the marketplace, from rebates, seasonal, book changes, etc. So I would invite you to be very, very aggressive with those particular units from the get-go and monitor and price and even sometimes reprice your inventory daily and then use what I would call my tiered turn program. So I'm going to leave that at that. And we're going to get to a poll question, and I'm going to throw this out here. I said 7 steps. I'm going to throw in 8, and I'm just going to say that we talked about in the beginning, specific defining proposition. Know your marketplace. Know what your position is in that marketplace. Be very clear about it, and rebudget based upon the ways that you can make profit. And what I mean by that is, there's about 4 ways to increase the bottom line of any business on earth. You can try to sell more, which is what we generally do. You can try to make more margin or gross profit. 3, you can increase your repeats. And 4, you can increase the cycle and speed of the repeats. Often, we try to go out and get new conquest customers. Every business has hidden wealth. The hidden wealth is your database of customers. So go to them first. And what you're going to do is not only try to sell your existing customers, but get more repeats, more referrals, and more from that household. And you'll also try to increase the speed of the cycle of them buying and trading in a vehicle. And when you do that, it'll take care of all 4 of those things that increase the bottom line. So rethink your budget about going after just conquest business. That should be last on the list after you've exhausted every possible means of trying to go from converting your service customers into sales and trying to go to your existing customers. So based upon that, let's throw out 1 more poll question. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, sir. Last poll question, audience, is on your screen now. Yeah, we want you to vote on this last poll question, and then we're going to start buttoning this thing up, doing some giveaways, and then also wonderful questions in our Q&A session. All right, so we want to know, do you currently have a written and executed accountability program at your dealership? Please select one of the following answers. Yes, and it's working great for us. Yes, but we aren't consistent with it. No, I've thought about it, but honestly, I don't know where to begin. No, we're afraid of losing employees. Very interesting. Or no, we hope problems just magically go away. You know what? I think a lot of companies are like that. So we want to know what's happening at your dealership. Do you currently have a written and executed accountability program at your dealership? Once we get a majority of the votes in, we're going to close this poll and share the results. And don't forget to get your questions in for the amazing Mark Tewart so that we can get to them during our Q&A session. All right, Mark, I do have more than half the people voted. Thank you, audience. You're amazing. 4 poll questions today, and you brought it every single time. So, Mark, are you ready for the answer to this? Oh, my goodness.
Let's hear it.
Let's see what the audience had to say. All right. Do you currently have a written and executed accountability program at your dealership? Only 7% of today's audience said yes, and it's working great for us. The majority, however, 39%, said yes, but they admit they're not consistent with it. A quarter of today's audience, 25%, said no, I've thought about it, but I don't know where to begin. Very good. 7% of today's audience said, no, we're afraid of losing employees. Very interesting. And the last one, 21%, actually pretty big size of our audience, said, no, we hope problems just magically go away. I'm going to assume, Mark, that yes, you want a written and fully executed accountability program at every dealership, but assuming that, as we can see, not all dealerships have that, do you have any advice on for those dealerships who don't have one, where they can maybe come up with one? How do you put one together? How long does it take? How stringent does it have to be? Do you have any of that kind of advice?
I would invite you to just start with the three C's and go from there, the basis of coach, counsel, cut. And I'd be happy to help anybody and assist them with this. The main thing is just getting together with a concentrated effort and formalizing it. And think about those save-a-deal meetings and also the one-on-one coaching, those type of things. That gives you the basis for what you're trying to accomplish.
I think that's a great idea. All right, how do we button this thing up and get to the fun Q&A session?
How do we button this thing up? Let me leave you with this. My son is 18. He drives, obviously. But for every single day that I took him to school, every day of his life when he did not drive, I would drop him off. And I said the exact same thing to him every day I ever dropped him off at school when he got out of the car. I said, Jake, think big, live large, and you're in charge. Think big. It's easier to think big than small. It's more inspiring. Have some big goals. And what can you do to do a lot more than what you think that you could possibly do? Live large. Live large doesn't mean that you have to go buy a bigger house or have a fancier car. It's not what I'm talking about. What I mean by live large, be more passionate. Do a little bit more in what you're doing and give it a greater effort that others aren't willing to give. You know, the difference between success and failure is often just a little bit of more effort. And then think big, live large, and lastly, you are in charge. Never, ever, ever make excuses if it's to be. You know, you're the one that's got to make it happen. You are responsible. No excuses. Think big, live large, and you're in charge.
Excellent advice. Now, do you also have some I might start saying that to my son, by the way. Do you also have some suggested resources for our audience members today?
I do. Number one, To Pimp Me Tour at onlinetraining.com. We have an online training program. We were actually many, many years ago the first in the industry to do online training. Before dealerships had T1 lines and people didn't even know what it was, they looked at me like, that was crazy. So we have Tour Online Training. We're very proud of it, and it goes through all the different departments for sales and management. Next is obviously Pimping Me Just a Little Bit. I'd love everybody to take a look at my book, How to Be a Sales Superstar. It's on Amazon. Either put in my name or the title, and you can find it. Another one, if you want to go to NADA once it's available, I just did a program for this convention called Eliminating Time Vampires That Kill Productivity and Profits. I think that could help people. And two people that have had a great influence on my life. One, Nito Cubain, the president of High Point University, the successful person in his right, and also the great beloved Jim Rohn, was a business philosopher, had a lot of great wisdom. And a book that made a big, big difference for me in my life that my brother gave to me and made me read when I was in sixth grade, of all things. Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. It will teach you a lot about the power of the psychology of your mind, your subconscious versus your conscious. So much of your success and failure and where you're at is based upon your subconscious. And the more that you learn about that, the better off you'll be, and probably the better and easier it will be to get results.
Sixth grade?
Sixth grade. Yeah, my brother was, it's a whole story. My brother passed away, died in an accident when I was a young man. I think I had turned 19. And a quick story, I know it's long, but my brother made me in sixth grade read this book, and he made me write down a whole bunch of goals, about 100 goals. And the first week I didn't write the goals, and he came back in the house, and after he got me down off the wall, I wrote my goals. And when he died, it crushed me because he was not only my older brother, he was my mentor. And his name was Gary. And but he taught me how to look forward with goals. But in his death, he taught me, don't forget about today because you don't know what's going to happen or if you'll get that tomorrow. So if you don't have some goals, write some goals. Read the book, Psycho-Cybernetics. My brother made me read it. It was a great idea.
I'm going to read it. I don't usually take book recommendations, but I will do that for you. I think that sounds great. It sounds like a really interesting book. All right, and what else do we have after this?
What we have after this,
action item. Audience.
As you leave here today, I invite you to do these four things, and I think everybody can do it. Number one, come up with a completely written and executed recruiting and onboarding plan. Create, if you don't want 100, come up with 30, 40, 50 interview questions you will utilize every time. begin to write down every single process and keep re-editing it and proving it, and F&I process, all of your processes. And then also create your education and training plan and execute it. Those are the four things I'd really invite you. There's a lot more, but, you know, you do that, you're going to be well on your path.
And then you get to the big yellow question mark, and now it's my turn. All right. Audience, thank you so much for sitting through that amazing presentation with first-time Dealer On webinar presenter Mark Tewart. I loved it. And you know what? We still have some more coming at you with some wonderful questions from the audience. Thank you so much for hanging on. We're going to get to those in just a moment. First, I want to direct your attention over to the handouts section of the GoToWebinar interface. In that handout section, you're going to find two amazing handouts. First, we have Mark Tewart's slide deck. Yes, it's got all that awesomeness that you just saw in there. Okay, so make sure you download that. And then Mark also is giving you a copy of his 30-day onboarding program for salespeople. Awesome. You definitely want to download that. Now, both of those are available to you until the end of this broadcast. Look in the handouts section of the GoToWebinar interface. Now, if you have any problem whatsoever downloading those handouts, that's all right. Email me directly at eliana@dealeron.com, and I'll help you out. All right? Now, Mark, if you wouldn't mind, let's go back one slide. There we go. All right. And audience, if you haven't gotten in your question yet, for Mark Tewart, get those questions in. We only have a handful of them, but they're great questions. We'd love to include yours as well. Mark, if you feel like it, please put on your webcam for us. And yeah, now comes the fun stuff. It's that time. If you missed it at the beginning of the webinar, I announced that our good friends over at Tewart Enterprises have two great prizes for you on today's webinar. First, one of you lucky webinar attendees will win a signed copy of Mark's book, How to Be a Sales Superstar, Break All the Rules, and Succeed While Doing It. Somehow, my face is on the big screen over here. That's unnecessary. There we go. Hey, Mark. How you doing? Right. I'm so glad. Okay. So, listen, this is what I need from you. We're going to give away this prize, and then we're going to give away the big prize, okay? So, everyone, get to your keyboards. First one to write in the correct response to our giveaway question is going to be winning this awesome prize today. Let me get this out here so I can see who our winner is. All right, everyone. I hope you type fast. Here we go. Good luck. Oh, and by the way, you win this, you need to send me your mailing address and your dealership name immediately. All right, everyone. Here we go. Good luck. What did Mark say are the two words that you must first use in the seven steps? Two words. He told a cute little story about it. With Bob Newhart. No one get it. Oh, here we go. Stacy Ellison, first one to write it in. That's correct. Stop it. Stop it were the two words we were looking for. Stacy Ellison, congratulations. You have just won yourself this very, very cool book. I'm a little jealous. I'm not going to lie. Stacy Ellison, Mark has told me to stop it several times. Oh, is that so? All right, well, you're going to be getting this signed copy of his great book, How to Be a Sales Superstar, Break All the Rules, and Succeed While Doing It. Stacy, please don't forget to send me your dealership name and, of course, your mailing address. We are going to be getting that out to you as quickly as possible. It's actually going to be coming from our friends over at Tewart Enterprises. All right, so look in the mail for that. Send me that mailing address, all right? Okay, everyone else, guess what? Stacy, you can sit this one out because you're already a winner today. But for everyone else, oh, yes, second prize. Let's call it the grand prize, all right? One person's going to win a 30 days of unlimited access to the Tewart 24/7 online training channel, the most comprehensive online training channel in the auto biz. This prize is valued at just under $1,000. And let me tell you, it's filled with some incredible information, really priceless. And this is not just a great prize for you, but for your entire dealership. Believe me, you're going to want to win this prize. So I hope you get this question right. Everyone, get to your keyboards. We're going to ask anyone who is a vendor to please kindly sit this out. This is not for you. This is obviously a prize intended for dealership personnel only. We do love having you on the Dealer On webinars, though. So thank you so much for being here. All right, everyone, here we go. Good luck. What are the three C's? Lee Richmond, how did you do that so fast? That's correct. Lee Richmond, congratulations. Coach, counsel, cut. Very, very well done, Lee Richmond. I don't know what dealership you're from. I know you're going to tell me any second now. Congratulations to Lee Richmond. You are going to be hearing from our good friends over at Tour Enterprises on how you can redeem that cool 30 days of unlimited access to the Tour 24/7 online training program. Congratulations. That $1,000 prize, dude. I hope you use it well and continued success, my friend. Now, I know your name wasn't Stacy or Lee. I know neither was mine. But you know what? We give away cool prizes every week on a Dealer On webinar. So come on back to another one. And who knows? That could be the day you win a great prize on a Dealer On webinar. For right now, Stacy Ellison, congrats on that book. And Lee Richmond, congrats on that big, huge prize, that 30 days on that online training course at Tuart Enterprises. I hope both of those prizes work out well for the two of you. Now, it's time to... Oh, by the way, I want to thank Tuart Enterprises and, of course, Mark, you also, for your incredible generosity. They were great prizes, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. You ready to get to some of these questions?
Go ahead.
All right, here we go. Let me scroll up for our first question. Okay, Sabrina wants to know, go back to that slide before. What suggestions do you have for a new general manager coming into an established dealership? And what are some of the primary things that a new general manager should be doing? Now, I feel like you already covered this, but real quick, let's go over a little refresher course. And specifically for a general manager, what can you recommend to Sabrina?
The first step, number one, as we mentioned, get to know the people first, individually, and spend as much time with them as you possibly can. Discover each person's why. And as you get to know the people, then delve into the four P's to see how the dealership can improve with people, process, your product being your inventory, and then your positioning. That should give you a great start.
Thank you so much, Sabrina. Great question. We really, really like that question. And then next question comes from Josh. Josh wants to know, what are some samples of crafted dealership stories? Remember, we talked about this. It's not enough to say that you're family-owned and operated, although there's a lot of you out there who do that. So is there a great example that you can think of somebody who has a great story that maybe we could tell them about?
Well, there is. I've got a client I was thinking about that's in Southern Illinois and several others that have done this. But over beyond telling their story of being family-owned and for how long, but doing video and talking about it, they also create different programs like this particular two dealerships I'm thinking about. They have what you call a VIP program. And so it becomes a part of your selling process. And when somebody comes in, they say, have you bought a car from us before? And if they say yes, no, it doesn't matter. So, well, great, let me share with you. It's been a while since you bought a car. If you've never bought a car here, we have a VIP program. And we would like to have all of our customers be clients for life. Let me share with you what's all in that VIP program. So they go over in great detail, and it's on the car. And then when we sit down to give numbers and proposals, we go back over that VIP program. And that kind of becomes, along with our story of who we are, it becomes what we do and what the benefit and the value. And so we have the client put a number, a dollar value for each thing on that VIP program, and then total it up. And we'll guide them through it by saying, well, if you had to guess, what would this be worth to you? So at the end, they're creating all the value and stating the value you're giving to them in the VIP in your Why Buy Here program before they ever even get the figures for the vehicle. And they're doing that willingly. And that's just a good step to be specific about not only your story, but your Why Buy Here program.
I think that's all great suggestions. Josh, if you have a follow-up question, we'd love to hear back from you. So get that question in, all right? All right, next question comes in from Amy. Amy, I love, by the way, I'm sure she was not the only person who thought this. So I'm just going to say right now, 100 interview questions? She wants to know, can we get an example of those 100 questions? What kind of interview questions did you ask? 100? And I know you said, hey, go back to your dealership, write up 30, write up 40, 50 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually have them written down?
I'll be happy to send 100 interview questions to anybody who asks. You can You know, the main thing is if you ask 50, that's better than 99% of dealerships do right now. I mean, let's face it. We interview people. We don't have a plan. And we say, do you like people? They go, love people. Do you love cars? Oh, I love cars. Well, hey, you're breathing. You're hired. And that becomes the hiring program. So you want, just like in a sales process, you want them to do about 80, 90% of the questions. If I were selling a vehicle, I'd want the customer to talk about 80% of the time. And they will talk 80% of the time if I'm asking the right questions. It's the same thing when you're doing an interview. You just have to be prepared. I'll be happy to share 100 interview questions for anybody that would like it.
Okay, for anyone who's interested, email Mark directly at mtuart@tuart.com. And he's going to get those 100 interview questions for you. I just want to know from anyone who gets these questions how it makes a difference to you. If you could just, let me know and say, these are questions I never thought of. Hey, these really opened up our conversations with new hires. I mean, I'm just curious because I would like to know. You know, Mark, send me that list too. I want to know. Okay. Oh, I thank you. All right. Let's see. Next question. I love this. To your turn. Brian wants to know, can you just expand on it just a little more? What's the difference between a tier turn and the regular way people have been doing it?
Without having a lot of time, let me give you the Reader's Digest version. Instead of, let's say, a dealership having a 60-day turn, a 45-day turn, or a 90-day turn, I treat all vehicles differently. So often what I'll do is I'll take the bands that you may be utilizing within your inventory management system, say below $10,000, 10 to 14,999, 15 to 19,999, and 20,000 and above. Let's just assume that it's a non-luxury dealer. And what I'll do is, knowing that I have more downside risk and less opportunity on a $20,000 above car, mm-hmm. That's where most wholesale losses and aging begin. And I know I've got about a 15-day window to probably make profit on that car. And after 15 days, my chances of making money go down probably 70%. So we said be aggressive on the pricing. But the other thing I'm going to do, if it were me, I'd do a 30-day turn on that particular vehicle. And some of you say, well, I just can't do that. But in other words, I'm going to make that turn on that vehicle less. I may take the other two bands, the 10 to 15, for, excuse me, 14,999, which is the sweet spot of most payments and most buyers and most subprime, and I'm willing to hold that car a little bit longer, maybe 60 days, maybe the next band of 15 to 19,999. I'll hold that one for, if you want, 60 days. And then here's where I'm a little bit different. Some people do 60-day turn. If I have a below $10,000 car, unless the engine falls out, that's gold. That's merchandise you can't get, and you can wholesale it and make money on. And think about it. You're not tying up much capital or floor plan and with almost no downside risk. So for me, I'd be willing to hold that car if it were 75 days, or some people would say 90 days, because I don't have risk and I have a lot of high potential for not only ROI, but what I call yield. So instead of just 60 days, I tier it. And I want to know how much of my inventory and what percentage should be in each one of those buckets as well. That's just kind of a Reader's Digest, just loose version of what I'm talking about with a tier turn.
I like it. I like it a lot. It sounds smart. Brian, thank you so much for the great question. And I didn't call you Bri-Bri. All right, next question. Lance wants to know, are your processes on your training site? Now,
yes.
Far be it from me to make you give away all of your goodies, but how would somebody get to those processes?
Yes, the processes we either train in dealership or online. Even though we have a suggested process, we realize that every dealership's a little bit different, so your process could be different, and we'll want to custom create for you. But yes, on the online training program, we do have some suggested processes for sales, management, F&I, and others.
Okay. All right. That sounds amazing. Lance, thank you so much for that great question. All right. Last question. Oh, and Jesse says thanks, and Amy says thanks too. And last question comes in from Tricia. She says, how do you deal with negativity and poor attitudes? Now, I know you told that great story before where you're like, hey, say it walking, pal, if you're not going to do the training. But is there a more gentle way to counsel somebody? I know you said counsel is a big thing. Is there a gentle way to counsel somebody to get them out of that negativity stoop and adjust their attitude other than threatening their job?
I think it should be a fun thing where every single day we're all telling each other by holding each other accountable, stop it. Once you hear the negativity or once you hear different things that aren't good, because your words become things, and it, you know, we all get into patterns. So if you can self-correct and help coach, but I think your one-on-one sessions with somebody, you'll pick up on this, because one-on-ones is not just about numbers. It's about coaching people. So I'll ask somebody, tell me your last unsold deal. Walk me through from beginning to end. Mm-hmm. And I'll begin to pick up on patterns of their words. I'll also begin to pick up on their patterns of the words about where they are in their month and why, and maybe the negativity of that. So I'll try to coach them. Then we move into counseling. The other thing I would suggest is if you're a general manager, I believe every month you should have a review preview meeting. When you close out your month, let's say if it's on the 5th of the month, as a general manager, I meet with each salesperson and I preview the previous month. Not only what you did, what your productivity was, what your results were versus your goals, we go over all that in great detail, every single number. But then we preview also what you're going to be doing this month and your goals and your game plan. But in that review, I'm not only reviewing just your numbers, I'm going to review a subjective thing called attitude. And I'm going to say if I notice or if I get feedback, I'm going to say, you know, I'm just going to throw it out to you, man. I'm seeing the attitude's not quite what it is. Tell me, man, what's going on? And, you know, maybe they want to share with you, maybe they don't, but if they trust you, you're going to find part of coaching is a lot more than numbers. You know, we're people, and we deal with people every single day. That's what we do. You got to coach people to achieve things. It's not just numbers.
Fair enough. By the way, Craig, I see, by the way, Tricia, first of all, great question. Craig wrote in, and I know you had so many great quotes today, Mark, and I'm wondering if Sharpie, he writes down his favorite quotes and puts them on his monitor. But Craig wrote in, what was that quote Mark said? Hire for attitude, but train for skills. Nice. All right. So
hire for attitude and talent and train for skills. Remember this for the rest of your life when you're hiring people. When you hire for attitude and talent and train for skills, remember this. You can't put in what God left out. You can't make a hero out of a zero. If somebody's got talents in areas, use their talents and their strengths. Spend less time on the weakness and try to spend more time on the talent. Don't try to put talent in that's not there. You can add skills, but you can't add talent. So you can't put in what God left out. We're all different. Hey, I'm good at about three things in life. I suck at everything else. And you know what I do with those other things? I delegate them. I find a way to put them in a different part of my day, have somebody else do it. If I don't do those three things, I major in the major. I don't major in the minor. I keep the main thing, and I just focus on what I'm good at.
Well, I don't know what you're not good at, but I know what you're great at. You give great webinar, Mark Tewart. Amazing presentation. I loved it. I hope it won't be long before you come back on the show and share some more of your amazing stories, your incredible quotes, and all that awesome knowledge you have stored in that big brain of yours. Thank you so much for putting on such a wonderful presentation today. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. You're a gem. I appreciate it. You're a superstar.
Oh, thank you. I haven't even read your book yet. All right, so I want to remind the audience, a link to download a copy of today's webinar recording is going to be emailed to you later today for your reference. Feel free to share it with your friends and colleagues. It was a great one. And it's also going to be posted online within 24 hours. So go to dealeron.com/webinars to view our upcoming webinar schedule or access any of our past webinars too. Also, at the conclusion of this webinar, you're going to get a short survey. Really short. It's like three questions. So please fill it out. We're always looking for quality feedback from our audience, and we want to know what you thought about today's presentation. So please don't be shy. Let us know. And yes, the Innovative Dealer Summit is coming up next week in Denver, Colorado, and our very own Greg Gifford will be presenting there and walking you through a step-by-step process to use local SEO to get your dealership on the map and the search results pages. And yeah, Digital Dealer's also around the corner. This time it's in sunny Orlando, Florida. Can't wait to see you there too. Greg will be speaking there as well with a session on local SEO using real-world examples and case studies. Remember to come to booth 307, see why thousands of dealers have partnered with us to sell more cars more profitably. And just to let you know, if you go to that bit.ly link and you pre-schedule a demo with DealerOn at Digital Dealer, you're going to score yourself a cool $100. Who couldn't use that? So make sure you visit that link, and we'll see you at Digital Dealer. And invitations will be going out tomorrow for our next DealerOn webinar, How to Increase Showroom Visits and Service ROs with Waze Local. That's right. Looking for a fresh new way to increase showroom traffic and service ROs at your dealership? Of course you are. Well, guess what? We found just what you need. Waze is an award-winning navigation app with over 100 million users globally. This wildly popular digital app is the perfect offering for businesses who strive to reach local customers on the road and easily influence the decision of in-market shoppers to choose your dealership. Join this fascinating one-hour webinar with Justin Nabosna from Waze as he discusses all of the innovations and strategic advantages dealerships can get with Waze Local. For instance, ads on Waze are seamlessly integrated into the map and navigation experiences to inform drivers about your nearby dealership and your current offers. Attendees of this fast-paced webinar will learn how Waze Local will help dealerships increase awareness and dealer locations and specials, how to use Waze Local to boost the number of showroom visits and fixed ops customers, how many potential consumers engaged with your ads and navigated to your dealership, and how to improve the success of both brand retail and fixed operations campaigns. Very interesting. If you're ready to put your dealership on the map and learn how to increase showroom visits and service ROs with Waze Local, well, you can't afford to miss this incredible presentation, so register now. And don't forget, DealerOn's weekly webinars are held at Thursdays, 12 noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Mountain, and 9 a.m. Pacific. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions regarding our webinars and our topics, well, heck, I'd love to hear from you. Remember, my name is Eliana Raggio. I am everywhere online. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Google+. I'm on all the automotive social networks. So you know what? Heck, just email me directly. I'd love to hear from you. Again, it's Eliana at DealerOn.com. Thank you also very much for spending this time with us today, and I hope to see you all in another webinar in our continuing education series. Take care, everyone. Oh, and go Eagles.